The following program is a presentation of the FlyPod New Media Network, www.theflypod.com.
Hello, and welcome to the Did You Know Show. I am your host, Alex Parnuk, and together we'll attempt to resolve some of the most complex problems on the planet, but in a very common sense sort of way, something that seems to be sorely missing in this age of media information overload. In doing this show, one would ask, why have I committed myself to this task? The plain and simple answer is, I want to get information to you that seems to be missing and not provided in the old media. So join me in the show through your interaction by providing comments, suggestions, and if necessary, criticism when you don't agree. You can contact me at shout@theflypod.com. Welcome back to the Did You Know Show and my continuing series on the lesser agencies of the executive branch of government. I was going to leave this minor executive branch entity out of the Did You Know Show inventory, but due to its unique function and historical significance relating to finances and history, I felt it needed to be included and discussed. Now, it should be understood that at this time, this entity's funding has not been authorized, and its authority to spend money has run out as of fiscal 2015. But I felt there was still an entity that needed explaining regarding its activities and aspect as to defining small business. Also, I believe that eventually, its funding will most likely, probably, more than likely be renewed, and it would continue being a player in the inventory of executive branch agencies. And I'm certain a certain participant relating to our global economic activities, specifically providing assistance in the transaction of commerce where funding might not be normally provided due to risk. Historically, this export-import bank was set up to do very specific things and was only chartered for a limited period. What that means is, one, its purpose is to facilitate the financing of American goods and services for export. And number two, it is that some entities are created but given a limited existence or funding authorization, and when that authority runs out, as it did on July the 1st, 2015, they have to stop doing what it is that they do. So today's show focuses in on this lesser-known entity entitled the Export-Import Bank of the United States. Additionally, its history was such that it merited discussion since the entity played an important role before, during, and after our entry and involvement in World War II. Now, before we jump into the essence of this entity, I'd like to remind listeners, if you have questions, suggestions, or comments, please feel free to contact me at theflypod.com New Media Network. The email address is shout@theflypod.com. Now let's get into the substance of the United States Export-Import Bank. As usual, I like to start out my executive branch series shows with the whys of a particular entity coming into existence. It should be understood this entity called the Export-Import Bank of the United States came into existence in 1934, not via a congressional legislative action, but through an executive action, i.e. Executive Order 6581 by then-President Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Its original mission was to finance trade with the Soviet Union, which at that time was involved in a war with Germany and needed equipment and supplies badly to continue that action. Recalling a bit of history during this pre-World War II period, the United States as yet had not committed itself to enter the war. And in fact, the historical record shows that the majority popular opinion in the United States ran primarily with staying out of the fray in both Europe and Asia. Now, shortly after the first Roosevelt executive order, a second was issued, which was intended to facilitate and finance trade with Cuba as a foreign policy tool, but was quickly expanded to include all countries except the Soviet Union, again, which was controlled by the first executive action. Not much further down the road, these two entities were merged into one single agency, which would become the Export-Import Bank of the United States, and in 1945, Congress would pass legislation creating the Export-Import Bank through the Export-Import Bank Act of 1945, which is Public Law 79-173, and is a codified bylaw statute in reference to 12 United States Code Section 635. This formally created the Export-Import Bank, which was infused with $1 billion from the United States Treasury, and thus begins the story. As stated previously, the bank's primary function was to promote international trade to benefit American companies and foreign entities at a lower rate than world financial markets were providing. From its inception, the Export Bank was instrumental in promoting trade with the Soviet Union, then Cuba, and finally the rest of the world. The Export-Import Bank served as a credit agency financing for all kinds of projects, as example of which would be the creation of the Pan-American Highway, which stretches from Alaska to the north and down to Argentina in the south. Also, monies from the Export-Import were instrumental in financing the Burma Road in Asia, and after the end of the war, assisted in the reconstruction of Europe through the Marshall Plan. Jumping a bit forward in history, when the Berlin Wall fell in 1989 and the Soviet Union collapsed, the Export-Import Bank was one of the first lending institutions to provide financing for the exports to the old USSR or Soviet Republic. Today, the Export-Import Bank has run into some serious criticisms due to the lending practices that have occurred recently. In doing this research, I found article after article calling this institution one that has outlived its usefulness due to the very liquid banking situation that exists today and has fallen prey to congressional cronyism due to its lending practices, especially relating to environmental issues and what I believe is the definition of small business. One such company being Solyndra, which made headlines expanding its capacity with federal dollars and then declaring bankruptcy. Now, by law, the Export-Import Bank was required to be reauthorized every 4 years, and this reauthorization has continued with some minor delays to the present day. Quite simply, it means that the Export-Import Bank could be eliminated any time when its functional authority ran out. An interesting feature of this bank's function is its charter, which specifically states that the Export-Import Bank does not compete with private sector lenders. Rather, it steps in when there is an inability of the private lenders to accept the commercial risk of a particular project. Now, as to the who, we find that in the bylaws of the U.S. Export-Import Bank, it is run by a chairman, a vice chairman, and three additional directors appointed by the president with the consent and advice of the Senate. Currently, the three additional directors' positions are vacant at the time of this podcast due to this Export-Import Bank not being reauthorized by congressional legislation after its charter expired. In addition to the above-mentioned board, there is another body called the Export Promotion Cabinet, which consists of various members of other governmental entities, such as we have the Secretaries of State, Treasury, Agriculture, Commerce, Labor, the Director of Office of Management and Budget, the United States Trade Representative, an Assistant to the President for Economic Policy, the National Security Advisor, the Chair of the Council of Economic Advisors, the actual President of the Export-Import Bank, Administrators of the Small Business Administration, President of the Overseas Private Investment Corporation, and lots of other small agencies that are designated at different times by the President of the United States. But this is a strictly an advisory group. According to Wikipedia, the bank operates primarily out of Washington, D.C., with additional offices in Chicago, Detroit, Minneapolis, and other locations. However, contact with the Washington office revealed that the Import Bank's organization structure itself now is by region rather than by city, as reported by Wikipedia. The regions were the Midwest Regional Office with headquarters in Chicago, and then offices in other regions such as the Southeast Region, Northeast, Mid-Atlantic, and Western. In attempting to find employment numbers for the Export-Import Bank, which I like to do, a call to the Washington, D.C. office obtained a figure of roughly 400 employees, which was close to the 402 employees for the 2013 number as provided by Wikipedia. No employee numbers were able to be obtained from either the Export-Import Bank reports, budgetary reports to Congress, or even the GAO, Government Accounting Office reports. Thank goodness for a staff person sitting and answering a phone in Washington, D.C. I challenge anyone to go to the budget reports for this entity and find a real number of employees. Surprisingly, I didn't even find the terminology FTE, which I've often used in my podcasts relating to government entities, which is full-time equivalents, which are the government's way of saying employees, but meaning full-time equivalents. According to an article in the Washington Post, the Export-Import Bank's operating expenses were approximately $90 million under 2013 data. Chump change by today's standards when we deal with billions and trillions. Now, from a congressional research report for fiscal 2013, I quote, "The president requested an appropriation of $4.4 million for the Export-Import Bank's Office of Inspector General, a limit of $38 million on the total amount the bank could spend on its credit and insurance programs, and a limit of $103.9 million for the bank's administrative expenses, still close to the amount that was provided by Wikipedia." So you might say in a nutshell, the Export-Import Bank takes taxpayers' monies and guarantees loans to foreign entities to buy American products and support small businesses in America. Now, that's my words. Now, the government has a different way of kind of putting it, and I quote from the Export-Import website, "Export-Import provides U.S. businesses with solutions to protect against foreign buyer non-payment and in turn supports the export of more American-made goods and services. And small business exporters need certainty and protection to tackle new markets, expand, and create jobs. In fiscal 2014, nearly 90% of Export-Import Bank's transactions, more than 3,300, directly supported American small business." We'll get back to this small business. Well, that's the bank in a nutshell. But before we finish up, I believe it is important to resolve one major issue which I related to, and that is the government's definition of small business. Years ago, it used to be so simple. The number of employees determined if you were a small business. But today, when going to the government's own Small Business Administration site, we find the following. Let me just give you a sampling, and you can be the judge and the arbiter. In agriculture, a small business would be listed as $750,000 in average annual receipts and 500 employee size standard. In mining, same thing, 500 employees. In the utilities industries, fossil and nuclear electric power generating, 750 employees. And this number fluctuates between 1,000, dropping down to 250 employees in renewable electric power generation. Now, in manufacturing, it's 500 employees. And in the wholesale trade industries, 100 employees for loans and other federal programs. And these numbers just fluctuate because of all the bureaucracy we find today in our government. If we talk about the real estate and rental and leasing, that's money. $27.5 million in average annual receipts qualifies it to be a small business. And offices of real estate agents and brokers are $7.5 million in average annual receipts, not employee numbers for small business status. And then we've, in the technical world that we have today, professional, scientific, and technical services, legal services, the number is 11 million, no number as far as employees. Accounting and related services are 20 million, no number. And this goes on and on and on, where versus when it gets to research and development in biotechnology, the number again jumps up to 500 employees. I could go on and on. I think you've gotten the point. Small business by government standards is really big business. Let me quote from Bloomberg News dated November the 9th, 2015. More than three-quarters of the Export-Imports Bank loans go to 10 companies, with at least $1 billion in loans flowing to each of the top 15 U.S. exporters, the likes of General Electric, Bechtel, Exxon, Mobil, and Caterpillar. Boeing alone accounted for almost 30% of the export-import lending guarantees. Well, that's it for this segment of the Did You Know Show. And I hope you have enjoyed this discussion relating to the Export-Import Bank of the United States. So long. Well, until next time in our next Did You Know Show, keep your powder dry and your silver coins in your pocket.